Welcome to another scorching edition of Reviewalrama, and I am Mrs. Birdman.
And I'm her co-host. That's right, I'm not steering this ship. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd.
That's right, it's my show.
It is, and we are recording in way too goddamn hot.
Canada. Surprisingly not the land of snow and ice, but the land of blistering sunburns and sweat today.
Although, surprisingly though, last week, when we were recording this, there was a heat wave in Alaska, and we were one of the coolest spots in North America. Figure that one out.
It was lovely here. I quite enjoyed that. On another note, we send out our thoughts and prayers to those in Calgary. In Alberta, the province, our lovely province of Alberta, who are enduring quite the flood. So we send our thoughts and prayers your way, that I hope this passes soon and you get home to your homes not being so...
Underwater, yeah. Yeah, hopefully the Red Cross will help out there. So yeah, I'll post some information below if you want to help donate some money. I know you can do it via text message. Stuff like that. So look out for more information on that. So what do we got on the show this month, Blair?
This month we have our Game Access Game of the Month is The Last of Us from Sony. And we also, with the theme of last, we have The Last Stand from Alliance Films, Doctor Who Christmas Special, and Season 7 Part 1 from the BBC. We also have Superman Unbound from Warner Brothers, Star Trek TNG Season 3 from Paramount, and Jack the Giant Slayer, also from Warner Brothers.
Well, without any further ado, here is my review from GameAccess.ca. This is your GameAccess.ca Game of the Week. Don't forget to buy or rent your video games from Canada's online video game rental service. Don't forget, using promo code TWIG, scores an extra 5 days added to your free trial. You gotta admit, that's pretty badass. In today's Game of the Week, we are looking at what I consider to be one of the masterpieces of this console generation, and I'm talking about Sony and Naughty Dog's The Last of Us, available exclusively for the PlayStation 3. And what this is, it's a zombie game without being a zombie game. Basically, you play Joel, and your mission is to escort young Ellie across a ruined North America to, well, get her someplace important. And the reason I'm not telling you a whole lot about the storyline is because that's the main reason to play this game. It's the story, it's the experience of The Last of Us, and it's not something I've seen in a game where I get that emotionally invested in a character. And it is third person. There is some shooting, there's also a melee system in place, but the thing is, engaging in combat is deadly. And the thing is, the enemies respond not like Resident Evil zombies where they all just rush you, or Left 4 Dead where it's literally just a horde. No, you can sneak around, you can knock people out, you can stab people in the neck with a shiv. It's really, really intense, and each combat feels fresh. I've beaten this game about 3 times now, and it is such a rush to play this game. And it's one of the games I feel I might actually be able to platinum this game, actually, because it's a game where caution is rewarded. Like, you don't have to fight every enemy in the game, but it most certainly doesn't hurt because it clears you a path. And it's just, it's an experience. Even after the first 20 minutes of this, you'll be like, holy shit, didn't see that coming. And there are certain beats that this game reaches where it is utterly just amazing. And I don't want to give too much more away, but Naughty Dog has created what I consider to be definitely in the top 3 games of this console generation, and I think it really deserves a place in one of the best games of all time. I really believe that. So check out The Last of Us from Naughty Dog. There's even a multiplayer suite attached to this game, and it doesn't feel really tacked on, to be honest. It feels like a natural extension. You can play as 2 different factions, the Hunters, who are people who scavenge what they can when they can, or the Fireflies, which are essentially the good guys rising up against the oppressive government, or government in exile that still remains within the continental United States. And it's basically like Last Man Standing or Team Deathmatch, more or less. But still fun, though. Still fun. If you can track down a collector's edition of this, I recommend it. You do get some extra bonus stats, or if you can find someone who has an EB Games pre-order code, well, you're going into this game with a bit of an advantage. Tons of collectibles to find, comic books, wonderful performances by Troy Baker and Ashley Johnson, I want to say her name is. And she does not look like Ellen Page. There's an article on Kotaku if you want to see more about that. So anyway, guys, you need to check out The Last of Us. Most definitely worth a buy from us here at This Week in Geek. Well, guys, don't forget to buy or rent your video games from Canada's online video game rental service. Don't forget, using promo code TWIG, scourge an extra 5 days added to your free trial. Now, guys, back to the show.
So this is an amazing game from what I can see from sitting on the couch just watching you play.
Yeah, and in all honesty, this is a better zombie movie than World War Z could ever hope to be.
And it's not even a movie.
Yeah, actually, there's something really cool on YouTube right now. There is someone who's taking gameplay and all the cutscenes and cut it into one movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it runs about 6 hours.
Holy.
But it is, like I've said in my review, it's a masterpiece. This is probably the best PlayStation 3 game out there. It's definitely in the top of our generation. I mean, honestly, Naughty Dog, the guys who did Uncharted, created a masterpiece with Uncharted 2 with big set pieces here. It's more focused on the gameplay and just the storytelling of it. Although, as of today's recording, Ellen Page did an Ask Me Anything on Reddit and did not appreciate her semi-likeness being used for this game.
Really? I thought she would be all for this.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, it's kind of weird. I'm actually going to show my wife what the hell I'm actually talking about here.
Well, from looking at the game, I can tell that her likeness was used, but I cannot see how that she wouldn't appreciate it.
Yeah, that was the original Ellie, and there's the new one.
Okay.
I like the new one better anyway.
Well, did she just not appreciate that it didn't really look all hugely like her anymore?
I don't know. Well, I guess it's so close. She's like, well, I guess I didn't get paid for this or whatever. Although the game's creative director, I think it was, I think Neil Druckmann, I think is his name. Once again, if I'm wrong, shoot me now. Said we tweak things over the course of development. And I just think the new one looks more human.
Well,
there's a lot more expressions of the face, especially when you play the game itself.
Yeah, I can tell that. They, like, the first one is more, her features in the second one are more softened. They're not as distinct. Like, Ellen Page has a very distinct and, like, kind of, I don't know even how to explain it, but just very distinct features that are kind of unique. And I think just with the new, they've kind of softened some of those.
Yeah, like, the new one looks more like a kid, and I don't know how else to describe it. She looks younger.
Well, I think Ellen Page should be glad that she's not being compared to a 14-year-old.
Yeah, and honestly, she should be goddamn flattered, because The Last of Us is a masterpiece of a game, like I've said. Although, I think she's in something called Beyond Two Souls next. I don't know anything about it, so. Hmm. Anyway, you should go out and buy The Last of Us. It'll be the best PlayStation 3 game you ever buy, without a doubt. And I can honestly say that if you don't like it, you're an idiot. Speaking of things that don't suck,
The Last of Us coming to us from
Alliance Films!
Excellent. And if you like action movies and,
well, I'm surprised no one saw this in theaters.
Well, it didn't do very well in theaters, and you didn't hear much about it, but come on. Who doesn't like a cheesy kind of
90s-ish.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's 90s-ish action movie on a Friday night with a couple of beers in your butt?
Now, I will say this. Now, looking at the packaging for this, Arnold looks, he's gotten on in years.
Well,
but if you look at the back, as he uses Vickers machine gun, which you learn in the movie from Johnny Knoxville is a World War I Nazi killer, that's pretty much a rip of how he looks in Terminator 2 Judgment Day, which is like 25 years old now at this point.
Yeah, he just looks, took some liberties with Photoshop.
Yeah, he just doesn't look all that good. What the last stands about, basically, somebody, this drug dealer, he's on the run from the cops, from Forrest Whitaker, and he steals what someone calls the Batmobile, virtually, and he's trying to get away, and they go through this sleepy southwestern town. There's, like, literally everybody's gone from this town. They're at, like, some giant football game. And they're all like, yeah, we're going to leave town. Ray Schwarzenegger, you take care of things and we'll be back.
Well, because he's the sheriff of the town.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, him and like his three or four deputies. Of which one of them is the guy from Mad TV, some hot chick, and some other random
basically
red shirt.
Basically bumbling idiots.
Yeah. And basically they come to town, they hear from the FBI, this guy's really dangerous. They're like, don't engage him, we'll have roadblocks set up. Yeah, he has paid the drug lord guy. Basically, they rip off SWAT, and he escapes, and they're like, okay, we're going to go to this town now because we can build a bridge with, like, an army of engineers and mercenaries.
Well, it's the shortest span for the canyon between
U.S. and Mexico.
U.S. and Mexico.
Yeah.
So it's the shortest span that they can make a bridge over so he can drive his car that drives ridiculously fast through. So basically this bad guy is kind of like I think he has some connections to car racing of some type.
Yeah, because he's like super awesome. Everything, he's been around the circuit since he was like 14 or something. But overall, one of the most enjoyable parts of this movie is Johnny Knoxville. He's not in it a shit ton, but he owns like this massive gun collection. And he says, yeah, I'm a museum. I can have this because I'm open one Thursday a month between 1 and 3 p.m. Bring the kids. And it's wonderful. I mean, he gets some really cool lines. Eventually, the sheriffs engage these mercenaries. They get their asses kicked, but then they get their act together. Most memorable scene in the movie for me is Johnny Knoxville fights one of these mercenaries in, like, a Norman helmet. And then he shoots a guy in the back with a flare gun. You may be thinking, big deal. He's wearing 12-gauge shotgun shells in a bandolier. He cooks the shotgun shells, which makes this guy explode.
Like, limbs, guts, everywhere.
Yeah, like, I haven't played video games that violent. Like, that was literally like a Gears of War type kill. It was amazing.
It was more violent than any death on World War Z, which...
listen to our review show.
Exactly.
Go back understand. And check that out. Yeah.
You'll understand.
I mean, ultimately, it's a really fun movie. In terms of special features, the one that I really liked was the Dinkum Firearm and Historic Weaponry Museum Tour. Basically, they show you all the really kick-ass guns. There's some, like, deleted scenes. There's the typical making of a scene breakdown because there's a really cool chase through, like, a cornfield. You guys know me. I love guns. And it's just neat to hear them talk about different varieties, some of them that were used in the movie, how much they cared, how much you really have to have a respected armorer on set, because these things can and will kill you if you're not careful. Even if they're firing blanks, that's how Brandon Lee died filming The Crow, because someone wasn't careful. So it's neat. I mean, honestly, The Last Stand, I really wish more people had seen this. It's a fun movie. It really is. Like, this is such a throwback to the 90s action era.
We had a really good Friday night watching this together. And one friend came over and said, why do you have this movie? And we both said at the same time, why wouldn't we?
Yeah, I'm like, dude, it's Schwarzenegger. And he's like, I heard it sucks. Have you seen it? No. Well, bite my ass. It's worth it.
Watch it, then judge for yourself is my thing.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Alliance really did a fantastic job. So check out The Last Stand from them. It's classic Schwarzenegger, and I'm glad Arnie's back.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Next up is Doctor Who. So do you want to do both of these together? Because they kind of move one into the other.
Yeah, I mean, they're virtually season 7. So we got Doctor Who, The Snowmen, which is the Christmas special, which happens after Angels Take Manhattan, which gets rid of the pawns, or they move on, or whatever.
But before Asylum of the Daleks.
Yeah.
Because it had the preview and the special features for Asylum of the Daleks.
No, Asylum of the Daleks was actually the first thing.
Oh, it was Clara's episode.
So, yeah, it was Clara's episode.
That's where I got confused.
Yeah. So, this one, so... Now you've got me all freaking confused. Okay, so, The Snowmen was a Christmas special this year, before we got the Season 7 Part 2 this year where Claire starts to run around. So this is Claire's first real appearance, because in Asylum of the Daleks, she's an insane Dalek.
Yes.
Or something weird.
So it goes Series 7 Part 1, then the Christmas special.
Then
where Claire starts with Part 2.
Exactly, with the evil Wi-Fi. Wow, if that doesn't confuse the hell out of you. So the Christmas special basically introduces the Great Intelligence as the big bad, which will be following throughout Season 7, more or less, which first appeared in, I think, the 70s? No, or maybe the late 60s. I think he was around with the Second Doctor. So clearly I know more about this than you.
Yeah, very much so. I haven't watched any of the old Doctors. I started with the Ninth Doctor. So
yeah.
With the reincarnation.
Yeah, I've been going back through some of the older stuff. The Third Doctor, John Pertwee, is hardcore. Seriously badass. So anyway, the Christmas special inside of a nutshell is Killer Snowmen. Controlled by, like, nano machines or something like that. The Doctor obviously stalks them.
They're really scary looking.
Yeah, they're not Frosty the Snowman. And, of course, we get Madame Vastra, her girlfriend, and the Sontaran Strax helping people out. It's surprisingly... It's really fun. Plus, we first get to see Clara, which the Doctor describes as the impossible girl. Because, well, she dies here. And then he starts meeting her throughout history, which is finally resolved in The Name of the Doctor, which is the season finale of this year. But we'll talk about that in another show when we get that actual Blu-ray. Now, I do have one complaint about this, is the special features are kind of light on this. Now, mind you, you do get the Children in Need Christmas special, which is like 2-3 minutes they do for this telethon over in the UK. And you also get other little bonus features like Claire's White Christmas, which is more or less a making of, kind of, like, or like a behind the scenes. It's like 3 minutes long. It's not that long. And then you get Vastra Investigates, where basically they introduce who everybody is. Vastra, Strax, and the girlfriend whose name I completely forget. And that retails, I looked this up on Amazon.com, and it runs about $15.99. Here, we're going to jump into Season 7 Part 1, which has 5 episodes on it, right?
Yes.
And you get the Pond Life, which is like the prequel. You get the Asylum of the Daleks prequel. You get a full television special, The Science of Doctor Who.
Which I believe I saw on television before Season 7 Part 1 came out. They had one per week
until Season 7 started.
Until Season 7 started, because I know Michael and I watched the Women of Doctor Who one night. So I'm pretty sure that's a television special, which is kind of neat that it's included.
Yeah, I was really happy to see this, especially because I watched another show called The Universe, and one of the scientists they talked to, Michio Ku, I'm pretty sure I'm fucking his name up right there, but they talk with him about time travel, parallel universes, about the TARDIS. It's a 40-minute special, like over 40 minutes, and it's really in-depth. It's a lot of fun. They also talk about regeneration. They talk about cyborgs between Daleks and Cybermen and the ethics of that, cloning and the ethics of it. It's really, really well done.
I really liked how they had clips of Doctor Who at Comic-Con.
Yeah,
with,
yeah.
With the Doctor and the Pawns.
Yeah, the Pawns are there, Stephen Moffat. And I can't remember her name, but she's
Karen
some. No, I'm talking about the executive producer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was on the Comic-Con panel as well. And that was a lot of fun to see that, because that was Comic-Con 2012, and it was Chris Hardwick doing the moderation for it. And then they also have a making of The Gunslinger, which is one of the cooler episodes in this. I think it's from a town called Mercy, I think is the name of the episode. Am I right?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, and you get Asylum of the Daleks, Mercy, I think The Power of Three, I think is another one of them, which Blair's looking at the front for some reason.
What does it say on the back? Oh, yes, it does. Dinosaurs in the Spaceship.
Yep, Dinosaurs in the Spaceship, A Town Called Mercy, The Power of Three, and The Angels Take Manhattan.
My favorite.
Arguably, I'm going to say this was actually a really strong season. Overall, there wasn't one episode that bored the shit out of me.
And see, I didn't mind, other than the time span in between, that it got split into two because it made sense. Because it's the end of the pawns.
And then you give them a break to introduce the new companion.
Correct. So in this respect, I didn't really mind that it was split into two, other than I had to wait so long in between. But it would, they need that time to make the second part just as great.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I'm not a big fan of people splitting things up. And I guess in Britain, I don't know this. If I'm wrong, feedback at thisweekingeek.net. You guys are used to having shorter seasons. And over here, we're used to a 26 to 24 episode order. Over there, it's 13, I think. And for here, now, I mentioned the price of the Snowmen, the Christmas special, specifically at $15.99 for one episode feature, or the, you know, the average length. And I mentioned the special features for a reason. Doctor Who Season 7 Part 1 is $16.99. So for a dollar more, you're getting five episodes and a lot better special features. I am not a huge fan of the way this is structured, because it's not price gouging per se. It's just not the way I prefer it done. Now I did read on Amazon there is a complete set where you do get the two Christmas specials. The one in the wardrobe where they find the giant tree people from last year. And then you get this one with the snowmen, and you get both seasons. Now, there may be more special features I just don't know about, but it's like $80. So it's cheaper to buy, if you just want just the seasons, it's cheaper to buy them individually as opposed to getting the box set.
I guess it's because the Christmas specials aren't necessarily considered part of the seasons, they're more as extras.
Well, it depends on how it connects, not storyline wise. Like this year, you kind of needed the Christmas special to get Clara.
Exactly.
Whereas last year, it kind of stood alone.
Well, and I'm usually not a huge fan of the Christmas specials, but this year I was quite impressed.
I think my favorite Christmas special would probably be the one on the Titanic. Although, it's funny you mentioned in terms of what you need to see. You needed to see the Christmas special for Tennant's regeneration, for him going into it. And you needed to see the end of time, which is him going into Matt Smith. Whereas you didn't need to see the next Doctor, where a guy gets that thing and he thinks he's the Doctor in his TARDIS hot air balloon. There are years you can skip and years you can't. This is one year you can't, because it connects the two series together. Because, yeah, you're right. This is actually it does bridge. So,
very much so.
So, I don't know. Like I said, take your bets with it. Do what is most economically sound for you. But overall, it's pretty solid. The BBC, I'm really impressed when they take their time with special features. Especially when they include quality stuff like The Science of Doctor Who. I'm looking forward to seeing what's on Season 7 Part 2.
Very much so. I'm excited to see what special features they're going to offer up there as well. Next on is Superman Unbound.
Now, this is your first DC animated movie.
It is. I've seen maybe little spits and spurts while I was walking in and out of the room. But this is the first one where I actually sat down and watched it with you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This one, Superman Unbound, the best way to break this down is Superman versus Brainiac, which he's not the douchebag in the pink suit with the green tights, or maybe it's the green skin and the pink. Yeah, I'm serious. He looks stupid. Here we get the Metallo-looking version, the robot, although we get Kara Zor-El, who's Supergirl, in this. And it's just not entertaining to me. I mean, there wasn't any real voice actors that jumped out at me. It's not the guy who usually does Superman, especially when they get, like, Kevin Conroy. It's not the same team who did Superman and Batman Public Enemies. It's not Superman versus the Elite. It's somebody I myself have no familiarity with. Although I think the guy that plays Brainiac, I think, was on House or something. And ultimately, it's how Brainiac is going around the universe collecting different cities. Like, he's got the Bottle City of Kandor, which is a city on Krypton. He tries to take Metropolis and all this. And how he's like, I'm a superior intellect. I can kick your ass because you're big and dumb.
So and basically he has a whole collection of all of these cities. And it's connected to Superman because Kara is connected to that because her city and her parents are in one of those bottle cities.
Yeah, they're still in, like, Kandor. And he's like, oh, yeah, I had dinner with them. Ha ha, your parents are still alive. I don't know, just, it's, I really think it's one of the worst ones out there. And that really sucks to say because the last one we got, I think, was Superman versus the Elite. Was the last Superman movie I saw, and All-Star Superman, which are both fantastic, I think. I'd say this is slightly above Superman Doomsday in terms of bad Superman movies. It's got really good special features, though. I mean, there's a wonderful, it's like 30 minutes, if not plus, on Brainiac. You also get a preview of Flashpoint. You get a little bit of stuff on, there's like a documentary, which is exclusive to the Blu-ray. You get a couple of cartoon episodes, which I even can't remember what they were. But they do that for every DVD or for every Blu-ray release. So they're not up-converted, as far as I can tell. So ultimately, Superman Unbound, it's a rental at best. I might say wait till it comes on Netflix to stream. Because Superman versus the Elite was there really quickly.
So if you want to check it out, wait on Netflix to watch it.
You know what I'll say? Man of Steel is better than this, and that's not saying much.
Yeah.
That fucking ending!
So next I'm going to kind of let Birdman go with this one because it's his thing and you guys know it's not really mine, but Star Trek TNG Season 3.
Why do you not like quality television? I can tell you better episodes of this than whole seasons of ER.
We could have almost a marriage-ending fight over Star Trek.
Yeah, because you have vegetable lasagna. I've got Commander Data.
Oh.
And Dr. Crusher's a better doctor than all those people. But I guess 23rd century technology, whatever. So yeah, the third season of Star Trek, The Next Generation, you guys know. This is the season that had the best of both worlds. This is the season that had Data's kid, Lau. This is the season that had yesterday's Enterprise, where we brought Tasha Yar back from the dead, and we saw the Enterprise C for the first time. It's good. In fact, very good. In fact, this is the season where things started to change, because Gene Roddenberry was in declining health. So he wasn't able to have as much hands-on as he did during the first two seasons. And you can tell, in this season, just a lot of really good writers came out to play. There's, like, even stuff with the Klingon Civil War, if I'm not mistaken, with, I think it's called Sins of the Father, I think. I'm not 100% sure on that. But it's got some really cool special features, and I did not expect this. Seth MacFarlane, that guy behind Family Guy, sat down and had all the writers for Star Trek. He had, like, Rick Berman and everybody else, their names escape me. I'm really sorry, guys. And them just discussing the funny episodes, the thought-provoking, how they used to look for new writers, like how if you wrote a script for Star Trek, they weren't accepting anything that was unsolicited. But that doesn't mean they couldn't pick your name out of a hat magically and pick you up later. And yeah, I was really surprised that that's what they would do. And some of the best episodes, I think the episode for Data, where he creates a child for himself, I think came out of the bin of rejected scripts.
Is that the one that you made me watch?
No, that's Measure of a Man, where they determine whether he's a person or not.
Oh, okay.
This one's really sad, though, because he creates a kid after himself. The problem is her positronic matrix, her brain, isn't as stable as his. Because he has no emotions, he can't feel her die. But she can feel. She's like, she's like, I love you, Father. And he's like, I know, but I cannot return the feeling because I can't feel. But what he does is he downloads her memories into him. So now she lives on through him. Which is, I always thought that was really, really cool. And then Time Magazine has rated this, I think, number 70 of the best episodes of television, where Captain Picard is assimilated by the Borg. The best of both worlds. This is something I've tried to show you. Because it's like it makes Star Trek cool. Almost Abrams-verse cool. And I'm really afraid when Abrams gets to the TNG stuff. Let's hope it never happens. But yeah, the best of both worlds where Picard's assimilated Commander Shelby as this advisor from Starfleet saying, hey, the Borg are coming and we better be damn ready. And
so in other words, Star Trek fans, flock to the stores, buy yourself a copy.
I think this is the best Blu-ray release so far because the writing and the episodes are so good.
And whenever they release new seasons, keep an eye on your local theater because
usually they do something.
Usually they do something and show a few episodes of the new digitally remastered stuff.
Yeah, and I missed this one because it was the best of both worlds. The Borg episodes because you were sick or something.
Yeah.
Your ass owes me a movie.
Well, my toilet owes me 2 hours of my life back.
On that pleasant note.
On that pleasant note, we move on to our last. Oh my gosh. I had a big brain fart there.
Yes, you did.
So our last movie, Jack and the Giant Slayer.
So to sum this up, the kid from Warm Bodies, Nicholas Hoult, Jack, there you go, basically he's this, like, kind of a loser kind of kid. He's always been told stories of epic adventure and all this thing. He wants to do his own thing. Goes to the kingdom, and somehow there's this huge legend involving giants, how they were banished to the sky, but there's this crown that was forged out of, like, a giant's heart or something.
So basically, think of Jack and the Beanstalk mixed with
a dark, gritty reboot.
Well, yeah, dark, gritty reboot of Jack and the Beanstalk with some extra lore and history thrown in.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly not that bad when you get into the storyline. I mean, there's this douchebag who works for the king who wants to take this crown for himself to control these armies of giants. Although, ultimately, he dies pretty quickly. Spoilers.
Smush.
Yeah, and then there's Obi-Wan Kenobi shows up. Ewan McGregor. Yeah, well, that's how I remember this. Like, he's not Sir Whatever. I don't even remember his name. I just called him Obi-Wan the whole time.
I don't remember his
name. Yeah, exactly. And that's unfortunate. There are parts of this movie that are completely forgettable.
Like the first hour?
Yeah, the first hour of this movie is really boring. But the last, like, 40 minutes or so are actually really cool.
I think it would have really looked good in 3D, though.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the movies where the 3D would have worked.
But the CG was horrible.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the movie itself, it's not bad as a whole. I mean, like, yeah, Blair to subscribe it, you know how this ends up. Obviously, he's going to win the day. But there are some pretty cool fights. That's another thing, too. This movie is surprisingly brutal.
Yeah.
Like, almost Last Stand brutal at points.
It is not a movie to show young children.
Like, I saw guys, now, if you guys know anything about medieval weaponry, one of the weapons that was used, it's like a siege weapon, is something called a ballista. Think of a giant-sized crossbow. They had an automatic version that was shooting people in the head and right through the chest and the torso. And I remember one guy had his face boiled off with boiling acid or oil or something.
Yeah, it's definitely not a child's friendly movie.
Oh,
it's
and then the guy explodes. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's not Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah, this is of, like, Frank Miller or Zack Snyder made Jack and the Beanstalk. And honestly, I will say this. Nicholas Hoult, the kid from Warm Bodies, he's genuinely really likable.
Very much so. He kind of made the movie for me and made me kind of interested to keep going.
Yeah, I mean,
otherwise, I may have gotten the push the button stop now.
I think it was Stanley Tucci for me, and I'm pretty sure that's the guy who played Sir Roderick, the guy who wants to steal the crown but ends up getting, like, stomped to death.
Okay, and was it just me, or did it remind you a little bit of Robin Hood Men in Tights at points?
Yeah, it did have that weird sense of humor about itself. I don't know, it's not quite fourth wall breaking, but they're definitely tongue-in-cheek with it.
Yeah, and so, that's the part I enjoyed about it.
Yeah, for me, it felt, the last hour felt like a really epic game of D&D. Like, literally, your game master throws giants at you and says, oh yeah, you've got the castle behind you, but good luck. It ultimately, yeah, it's really good. Although, the special features on this kind of light. You do go up this virtual beanstalk, and you do these essential videos, essential to becoming a giant slayer. It's basically, it's special features hidden inside a bunch of stupid menus. Interesting stupid menus. There's a gag reel. It's okay. The deleted scenes ended up on the floor for a reason. Overall, it's a rental.
Yeah.
It's not worth buying. I mean, and the only reason I say that is because once you see it once, it's just not something I can see a lot of people going back to.
I wonder if it's on Netflix yet.
I don't think so, because it just came out on Blu-ray. I mean, we've only had it a little while, so.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, check it out. But if you're going to show this to younger family members, you've been warned. Just be understand, you're going to have to explain away some of the nightmare fuel that shows up, especially right at the very end, when the giant has a beanstalk explode from the inside out, and he literally is jibbed like Mortal Kombat. It's ridiculous.
It's cool, though.
It was pretty cool. Well,
on that note, goodbye, my nerd friends. I have been Mrs. Dodd.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, and Blair, this is your sign-off.
Well, I know it's my sign-off, so goodbye, good luck, go see some wonderful movies, enjoy.